If you're ever in an emergency serious enough for you to call 911, the last thing you want is trouble getting to talk to someone. There's no voice on earth soothing enough to deliver it. Your call is important to us when your call is critically important to you. People in the dispatching business notice some issues with finding enough people to staff dispatching centers, especially in rural Oregon. Let's find out the causes and the results. We have two guests with us. Margie Mullen is the director of ECSO, Emergency Communications of Southern Oregon. Eric Gablix is the director of the Oregon Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. We'll get him on the phone in just a minute, but Margie's in the studio with me. Welcome, Margie. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about the general situation with dispatching jobs. I can imagine, given some of the rigors of the job, this is probably not the easiest position to fill in the first place.
No, there's quite a rigorous testing process that we have to put people through to get hired in the first place, but we're really looking for that quality person that can multitask well, that can stay calm in a difficult situation, and that really understands the complexity of the job. It can be difficult to find the right person. We really have to narrow it down. We'll interview several people and put several people through a testing process, and then narrow it down to one or two people, whatever we're looking for at that time.
What's the usual rate of people you are going to take to people you don't? I wonder if this is a little... I have to believe that you probably have fewer people who are qualified for the job just by temperament right up front.
Sure. And also the skills. You have to be able to listen to things and translate that and type it in at the same time and have multiple things going on at once. So there's a variety of tests that we do to find the right person. If we start out with about 80 applications, we probably end up with maybe 5 people out of that end up either being hired or placed on a list for future hirings.
Okay. Eric Gablix, thanks for joining us from the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. So the dispatching job is pretty much the same all over the place, I'm guessing, but are there some differences region to region?
Well, absolutely. I mean, what we run into is in Southern Oregon, obviously our largest community is Medford and then the surrounding areas. And then we have Josephine County just up the street, which is more rural with less resources. And as many of your listeners know, they don't, in many of those areas, don't even have 24-hour law enforcement services, which creates some additional challenges for the dispatchers. But then if you look across the state, we go all the way up to the metro area in Portland, with the Bureau of Emergency Communications as our largest 911 center, and not far behind are Washington County and Clackamas County. So there are regional differences, but really when you boil it down, the job is the same, which is that we're all looking for dedicated men and women that have the ability to multitask and that can deal with people in crisis and get them help.
Did we have an expression for this, Margie, before it was multitasking? I mean, these skills apparently have needed to be there all at the same time for years.
They have, and I wonder about that because multitasking does seem to be a buzzword in a lot of different professions now, but it's certainly, it's really kind of times 1,000 in our positions because you're doing so many things at once. But.
So you talked about the qualifications you look for before you even hire. I mean, are there good jobs that are good prerequisites to be a dispatcher? Are there things that other careers that people might have come from that position pretty well into dispatching?
You know, we haven't found a single profession. There's a lot of different things that you can do. Any experience that people have can help, especially if they're working a job where they are multitasking. We get a lot of people that apply from call centers that can be helpful. Really even baristas who are talking to people and doing multiple things at once and making different drinks and remembering those things, anything like that. But we do train it. It's just you sort of have to start with that natural knack to be able to split your mind a little bit.
Eric, let's talk about the training then, because this is what DPSST provides through the academy somewhere in the Salem area, isn't it?
That's correct. We're based at the Oregon Public Safety Academy here in Salem, and we have been providing for more than 20 years a basic 911 training program, which is 2 weeks in length here at the academy, and an additional week where we cover specifically medical dispatching, which is providing pre-arrival instructions before the fire rescue units arrive. And then also, once they leave the academy, we have a very comprehensive field training program where the students coming here, obviously they're employees of local 911 centers, they come to the academy in Salem, and then they go back to their agency. So in the case of Emergency Communications in Southern Oregon, they'll go back to that communication center and work under the leadership of a field training officer or a coach and learn how to do the job there locally. So the local equipment, the local resources, the local policies and procedures, and it's a pretty comprehensive program we have.
So Margie Mullen, in Southern Oregon, for example, how much training outside the academy are you going to give a dispatcher before you let them begin to actually take live calls?
It's a lot. You can be in training anywhere from 9 months to a year. It's an extensive training program. It takes a lot to learn. You're learning all of the different, not just taking the calls for 911, but also dispatching the police and fire units. So there's a lot to learn in this particular job.
Well, it really is an investment then. I mean, you're talking about 9 months to a year into a person before they ever begin to be able to operate the shift.
Exactly. That's part of what makes it so tough to maintain staffing throughout the nation, because there's trouble with that everywhere. But because it does take so long, once you know that somebody's retiring or leaving, it's a much shorter time period until they vacate. So you're spending the next year going through a hiring process and getting that person to fill that position. So it can start to stack up if you have several people that leave at once. And then if you do have people that aren't successful in the training program, that backs you up even further, so it might take 2 years to fill a position.
We're talking about emergency dispatching here on the Jefferson Exchange and some issues with filling the position, particularly as we hear in rural Oregon. Margie Mullen is the Director of Emergency Communications of Southern Oregon, ECSO. Eric Gablix is the Director of Oregon's Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, which provides a training program for dispatchers, among many other positions. You can join this conversation. Let's hear your thoughts about dispatching, and maybe it's a job you've held at one point in your career. We'd love to hear your story. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, to join us by email, jx@jeffnet.org. In Eastern Oregon in particular, Erica, or in rural Oregon, I guess I should say, are there real issues with trying to get positions filled?
Well, it's an issue across the state and across the country, and I think the discussion we've been having talks about some of the challenges, which is you have to have the right skills. The other thing is that you have to have the right background. And what I mean by that is you obviously can't have a criminal history, so we're not looking for the person that had a drinking issue when they were in college where they got arrested for MIP. That's not a disqualifier, but we're looking for people that have felony convictions. Those are obviously things that we can't hire in this profession because of the sensitive nature in the work. But, you know, across the state, we have a number of rural communities that do have their own 911 centers. In fact, each of our counties in the east side of the state has its own public safety answering point, usually under a police department or sheriff's department. And up in the Gorge, we have what's called Frontier Communications, which are a number of counties in the Sherman-Gilliam area where five counties have banded together and have a regional dispatch center simply because of their size. They like to joke that they have more cattle there than they have people living there. And it's a rural area, but it has all the same challenges of emergencies that every other community has. And really, each agency is looking for dedicated men and women that want to come into work every day, help people, and also help the responders get home safely.
Which is the good side of the job, but you know, you're going to have some people who are in some pretty dire circumstances when they ask for help from dispatch. So how do you train for the stresses of the job, Eric?
Well, one of the things that we stress is that the dispatch position, the 911 operator, is the first responder. They're the ones that are going to talk to the person having an emergency first. So in some cases, it's not a very positive call. It might be a mom or a dad whose child stopped breathing, and that 911 operator is going to provide pre-arrival instructions to give them CPR until responders arrive. In other cases, it may be a person who just came home from a vacation and her house has been burglarized. It might be a person whose house is on fire. We see a lot of calls, obviously now in the mental health arena, where people are calling because they're desperate, in some cases looking to commit suicide, in some cases looking to find health assistance. And then we also have the good stories. So we have people that are calling because something has happened where they've come home and everything's been fine because the officer stopped and checked on things and they're just saying thank you. So we really work on getting the men and women doing the job the ability to realize that they're going to be dealing with people in crisis and that they need to also have a way to vent at the end of the day. So, you know, what we like to say is when you leave work at work. Don't take everything home. But obviously there are resources available either through peer support programs, just by talking to coworkers in some cases called stress first aid, and then all the way up to peer assistance, for example, chaplains that each agency has access to. So when they do get that horrific call of perhaps a baby that passed away or a person in a horrific accident that may be a coworker or someone they know in their community, that they have a way to talk to somebody about what they've experienced and to be able to kind of cope with it and then come back to work the next day.
Margie, that's a particular issue, I imagine, in Southern Oregon as a fairly small and close-knit community as it is. And in fact, it has happened in the last couple of years, as I recall.
Yes.
So how do you get ready for a situation like that?
I'm not sure you can ever really be ready. I think that, you know, you take so many calls in that 9 months to 9, 10, 11 months when you're in training. You have somebody sitting with you to help you through that. But we have employee assistance programs. We have peer support groups. We have a wellness program. The Rogue Valley Chaplains work with us. And we have a department counselor as well. And the Rogue Valley Chaplains and the department counselor are great about coming in just randomly to make sure that everyone knows them. And it helps prepare us to have that person you can turn to when you do have a tough call, because you will. You don't get through this career without having calls that bother you, the calls that stay with you your entire life. And it's trying to work through that and making sure you have a good support group inside of your work life and outside of your work life to help through that.
Emergency dispatch, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Margie Mullen is the Director of Emergency Communications of Southern Oregon, ECSO. Eric Skablix is the Director of Oregon's Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. You can join our discussion on the exchange. Maybe you worked as a dispatcher once. Maybe you tried to get through to a dispatcher once and the phone rang and rang. Give us your story, 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Have cell phones made much difference, Margie, in the training of dispatchers and the utility of the dispatching centers, for that matter?
Absolutely. It's made a huge difference. For one, before cell phones, if somebody passed an accident, let's say there was an accident on the freeway, they would go to a phone and call us. Now, because of cell phones, we'll get multiple calls on the same accident. So it's increased the frequency. It's also taken some time for the technology to catch up to where we can try and find where a person is at. If you're calling from a cell phone, there's no guarantee we're going to know exactly where you are. Sometimes we get really good coordinates. Sometimes they're pretty far off. So we can't always find someone that's in need of help if they can't tell us where they're at. We also have a lot of hang-up calls. So a lot of people don't know that if you have a cell phone and you no longer have a subscription service, as long as that battery is charged, you can call 911. So what happens is they'll give the phone to an old phone to a child to play with, and it still has a battery on it, and that child will be playing with it, and the phone will often dial 911 just as not knowing what you're trying to do when you're pressing a bunch of buttons. So it will default to calling 911. So we get a lot of calls that we're trying to track down that we have no idea where you are. And those phones we can't call back.
But by and large, in the age of not only cell phones, but caller ID, it seems like dispatchers are probably getting a lot more information than they used to get when people first called.
We do. But again, cell phones are, you know, not quite as good as landlines, but about 80% of our calls come from cell phones. Wireless phones have really kind of taken over the industry. So it's changed the way we do our jobs.
We noticed that recently Coos County was having some glitches with its location system where they were not seeing automatically where callers were calling from, addresses like that. I mean, what do you do with a situation like that? You have to sort of retrain dispatchers and the public at the same time?
Sure. Well, we know not to rely on the technology. We know that's why when you call 911, you may hear us ask you, can you repeat your address to verify that? And what we're doing is we're making sure that the information we're seeing on our screen matches where you're telling us you are, because it may not. If you've just moved, and let's say that you have a landline phone at your house and you move to a new house, and 2 hours after you've moved into that new house, you have some emergency. Well, your phone records may still show that you're at that old residence. So we want to verify that what we show on the screen is actually where you are.
Eric Skablix, let's talk about technology a little more broadly, because it's, you know, when you think about the things that are included in smartphones now, all the different apps that you get with each new generation, and the generations can be just a few months apart now, there's all kinds of information available to consumers using the phones. How easily does any of that integrate into the software and the hardware that you have for dispatching?
Well, I think it's a great question, and as this discussion's been going on about, you know, the way to contact dispatchers through 911, I would say that we are constantly trying to catch up with the newest app and to stay current, and that is a very expensive and timely process. So we have the technology which allows callers to call the 911 centers, but then we have the technology within the 911 centers that allows the employees to process the call. So those changes are expensive and they're timely, and we are usually behind the curve by several months trying to catch up. And one of the things that we often run into are, you know, people have the belief that they've seen something on TV on a story, and that exists in every local community. That's honestly not the case. We do have statewide 911 service. We have enhanced 911, which means that we get a location and a number for a landline call, but that's all changing as technology goes wireless. So we have a great statewide program through Oregon Emergency Management. Everybody pays for that as part of their monthly telephone bill. But from a technology standpoint, we're always trying to catch up and stay current with what's happening.
Margie, as people come in a little more tech savvy, are they sometimes a little disappointed in what they find when they get into a dispatching center?
I don't know that they're disappointed. I think being tech savvy helps. I think that having the ability to do so many things now, it seems like people are born with a smartphone or some sort of technology in their hands. That is helpful, actually, and will be more so as things change in the future. I'm not sure it gives you all of the experience you need, but I don't know that they would be disappointed just because there's so many things going on at once. The dispatchers are watching 7 screens at a time, so there's a lot to learn. It can be very overwhelming from the start. I doubt they would be disappointed.
It seems like a couple of decades ago, and I've got a couple under my belt in Southern Oregon, that you were calling different dispatch centers, at least news media were. Now, there's been a bunch of consolidation over time, hasn't there?
Yes.
So are individual dispatchers handling more different agency calls?
Yes, they are. They're just doing different positions all of the time. So where you might have worked for one particular agency before and taken calls for that agency, now you've got several different agencies. We have about 30 agencies that we dispatch for and we handle. There's just one 911 center in the county now. You're right. We've consolidated quite a bit. And we also dispatch for police, fire, and medical. So we work four tens. So you may work for half of your shift dispatching police. You may work for half of it taking calls, or you may work for a third of it doing fire dispatching and then switch to police or call taking. So you do have to know a lot. It takes a long time to learn all of it.
Question that Patricia and Grants Pass dropped off, wondering why there is one dispatch center instead of you call the fire department for fire and the ambulance for ambulance, that sort of thing.
It's quicker because oftentimes it's not just one particular agency that's going to take that. And it does offer consolidation, offers us a better opportunity to communicate amongst each other. Like, for example, if you're out in a rural area and you have an accident and we're sending police and an ambulance and a fire department, let's use, for example, the Rogue River area. If we're all in the same room and each person that's dispatching each of those resources can communicate together, all of that information is going out to all three of those resources at the same time. So it's much more streamlined that way.
Okay, John and Eugene has a question. He says, my understanding is that a large majority percentage of calls should not have gone to 911 in the first place. Could aggressive elimination of the inappropriate calls decrease the need for and therefore shortage of 911 dispatchers? Eric, why don't you take this one?
Well, people call 911 for everything, and that varies from, believe it or not, that their pizza was delivered cold to their home. They ask what time fireworks are when they're posted as dusk, so they want to know exactly when it is. They call 911 for directions. So the question is fair. 911 has become a Rosetta Stone, if you will, for public's questions. In some of our larger communities, we actually split those calls off to a non-emergency number. For example, City of Portland has, I believe, 311 that you can call to report a pothole or some other issue. But in other communities, 911 is still the number because local people understand what an emergency is and when they should be calling. But I think it's an issue we're all working on, which is to get the public aware of what is a true emergency, what is a non-emergency, and then also what doesn't need a public safety person to even respond to.
We're talking about emergency dispatching with Eric Skablex from the Oregon Department of Public Safety Standards and Training and Margie Mullen, the Director of Emergency Communications of Southern Oregon, ECSO. So where do you guys do outreach? Where do you try to find new dispatchers? Is there much in the way of beating the bushes, going to Craigslist, placing want ads, whatever, to try to look for people, Margie?
We do try to put out wherever we can. There's different websites that we can use. We also have some different national sites that we can use to try to look for laterals, look for people with experience that know whether they're going to like this job or not. We're trying more and more to get our face out there in the public and go to things like job fairs or the county fair and talk to people about what 911 is and let them know that there are opportunities here. It's changing quite a bit, trying to get the word out to those that are in colleges. The job itself is changing and will continue to change, so I think we need to start looking in different directions for people.
What kind of person is drawn to dispatching, Eric's?
People that like excitement, people who like to help others. People who may be a volunteer firefighter or reserve officer that are looking for a career tied into the public safety family. You know, as we talk about what kind of people skills we're looking for, you know, we have stress levels of air traffic controllers, which is getting, you know, planes obviously from one airport to another safely. Dispatchers and call takers are doing the same thing. They want to get public safety responders, police, fire, EMS safely to the call and back to the station and home at the end of the shift. We also have people that, and we talked a lot about multitasking, but waiters and waitresses are really good people with this because of the skills that they have in customer service, but also being able to remember multiple things at one time. So we're looking constantly for individuals that are drawn to the excitement, but also understand that there may be hours of just routine calls, and in some cases, no calls, but then could be minutes of sheer terror with a major emergency such as a vehicle accident, a house fire, or a robbery in progress.
With so many retirements coming with the baby boom generation, are you looking at potentially more staffing problems in the future statewide, Erics?
Well, what we're looking at right now is across the public safety family in Oregon, we are seeing the baby boomers leave. So we right now are looking to fill statewide between city, county, state, and tribal police agencies, 500 positions. We're looking for city, county corrections to fill approximately 150 right now. And in 911 communications, we're looking to fill about 100 positions right now. And we believe that number will continue into next year because the boomers are just starting to leave. So we see a lot of turnover coming up because people have given 20, 30 years in this profession, and they love it, but they're ready to retire and enjoy retirement with their family, which means we've got a lot of opportunities for people looking for some excitement and to be part of the public safety team.
Margie, just a few seconds left. I've always wondered why 4:10s. I am not crisp in hour 9 and 10 on my job. I can't imagine a dispatcher would be.
They actually are, and the third day off is very, very helpful. They need that time to sort of de-stress, and I think that that's a huge benefit. Having a third day can change things quite a bit.
Okay. Well, you heard a lot about emergency dispatching here on the Jefferson Exchange today. I want to thank Margie Moulin from Emergency Communications of Southern Oregon for coming into the studio. Good
thank
to have you.
You
here. Eric Skablix is the Oregon Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, DPSST Director. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
Thank you.